Hey everyone, Neil Chappell here. Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Answers Podcast. I have really enjoyed putting together the first few episodes with me and John just chatting about things fertility, just like the end of most of our clinic days. But I'm excited today to bring you a different spin on what we are doing. And to be honest, I am really excited about this new format because this is kind of what we wanted to do from the start, which is bridge the perspectives of patients and physicians. So instead of me and John talking, I'm actually going to bring some patients in to chat about their decisions. I have always wondered about the many decisions that patients have to make along the way in their treatment and in their journey, and how they make those decisions and why they make the decisions that they make. Because by the time they make them, we usually are off to the next step, just like they want to be. I find myself reflecting back on different patients and their choices, and what was it that influenced their decision for that or this? Really honing in on those critical points, those forks in the road, will help me to understand what future patients need, and also hopefully help a few listeners make decisions of their own as they face similar questions. This is the first of many episodes that kind of focus on the forks in the road. Today we'll be interviewing Bree and Cameron about their decision to bypass IUI and go straight to IVF. There will be plenty more episodes of all sorts of various decision points. So I hope you enjoy the first one, and as always, open to any feedback that you may have to offer. Happy listening. I wanted to bring you guys here, Bree and Cameron, to talk about decisions that you guys made along your journey. And I'll try and touch on some of the science and the fertility aspect of it, because if someone would say something and I would be like, that's not right. Yeah. And so I kind of do want to take a second throughout this conversation to point out or highlight important kind of medical aspects. And so without going into too much information, you know, one of the things that stood out from the first day that we met is that you have PCOS, and you have a very special kind of PCOS. Right. That's the lean PCOS, and you got that diagnosis from your primary doctor. So I guess we can start by just hearing some thoughts from you about what that meant to you, or how it was explained, or how you kind of internalized that.
I mean, it was completely shocking because when you Google it. Because I was already Googling, like, because my menstrual cycle disappeared. So I was trying to figure out why. And PCOS came up, but everything you look at, there's all kinds of signs that you have it. I was like, I don't have any of these, like nothing. So then whenever I went in, and my doctor literally diagnosed me right then and there. She's like, oh, you have PCOS. Like, we'll check to make sure, but you have it. And I mean, I was glad to have a diagnosis, but I was completely shocked. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was overwhelming at first because I mean, it just, I was like, I don't know what, you know, what all it entailed. And then the insulin resistance diagnosis came along with it, like right then and there. So it's like I had no idea.
It was a big train.
Yeah.
So that actually is a really good point. I'm totally glad I asked you about that instead of jumping right into what I wanted to talk about. Because that is a really common misconception that I get, is that folks that come in with lean PCOS say, oh, I don't have lean PCOS because I don't have abnormal hair growth, or I don't have acne or whatever. I just don't have periods.
Yeah.
And it clearly can't be PCOS because I read that you have to have these three things.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of a disservice to PCOS that we think of it as one thing. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of different things that all lead to the same endpoint that is polycystic ovary syndrome.
Right.
And that's just really nothing other than a manifestation of us as clinicians really not having a great way to categorize stuff at this point.
Right.
The job for us and someone that has irregular cycles is finding out why.
Yeah.
And even going past the diagnosis of, oh, you fit into the PCOS category, which subset of PCOS are you?
Mm-hmm.
Because those are very different treatment paradigms. And for you guys, you got the diagnosis, and yep, it came along with insulin resistance, and most PCOS patients do have insulin resistance, so it's worth asking your doc about that, because that can make a huge difference in your care and long-term risks, as long as you address that. And for the listeners, insulin resistance is essentially just the body's
has an altered response to sugar. So you overproduce insulin because you don't listen to sugar appropriately, and that causes some downstream effects. We're going to have to devote two or three podcasts to that to really dig into the specifics there. I've nerded out on that for about 5 or 10 years, so we'll talk more about that at a later time, I promise. But when you came to me, we had already checked your AMH, and it was really high.
Yeah.
Most AMHs are 1 or 2, and yours was close to 30,
yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So what had you been told, or what was your understanding of what that meant when your doc checked that?
From my Googling, that's what I did.
Yeah, we need to probably
from
talk
my
about
Googling
that.
Dr. Google, you're gonna notice Dr. Google plays a huge part in this story.
Yeah.
He was right along
many stories
with
but
us.
But from my Googling, I just was like, oh gosh, I have too many eggs. That's what Google told me.
Okay, that's not bad.
From after that, and I was like, okay, we probably are gonna need treatment. Maybe that's not a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than being super, super low or
yeah,
on the other end of the spectrum. But all I really understood from it was I have a lot of eggs, and then I guess learned it was actually follicles.
Yeah, right.
Maybe still is.
And I'll
right,
say this about her is where she differs from a lot of people, I would imagine, is when she hears about something, it don't matter if it's with her body, my body, a family member's body, like, she does jump on Google, but she's just not like, Dr. Google, what does this mean? I mean, she's reading medical journals. She's reading case studies. I mean, she is, like, diving in to understand everything because, one, she wants to know what questions should I ask the doctor and how can I better understand what this is. And I think she does a great job at that, although Google can be scary.
I do get on Google and just look at, like, forums and everything, but I know that I need to be reading the long, boring medical journals and the case studies.
What do you mean boring?
Like that. It's so much more fun to read people's comments. I have PCOS and this is my story.
But yeah,
I knew that I needed to read like actual research medical journals that's facts and statistics.
I think that, to me, that's the whole point of what we're doing here with this, mm-hmm, Fertility Answers podcast, is we're bridging those two things. Because
yeah,
I want to bring the boring research articles,
right,
which I can't seem to put down. I don't know what that tells you about me. With the stories. And
yeah,
put them both together and make them make sense for everybody.
Right.
Because I don't read enough about the stories to really understand the nuances in the treatment and how it affects the patients,
yeah,
that I talk to. And some of my patients will read very, very, very interesting stories about the most random fruit,
yeah,
that is harvested in Papua New Guinea or something that they should take. And I have no idea where they're finding that.
Yeah.
And so I think we all need to kind of have an understanding,
right,
of what we're looking at. And so I think it's worth talking about where did you Google you so forums, but you, where do you get medical journals? Where do you get that access?
So the ones that would pop up, there was most of them were forums, and that's what comes up on the first few pages,
yeah,
is people writing in and they're telling their story and their experience with it. But if you keep on pressing that next button on Google, you run out of those, and it's actual medical journals, and it's case studies on, like, this was an actual clinical trial that they did, and it's got statistics, and they had this many women, and this, you know, they did a control and everything like that. And so I would read those to get, like, the facts and learn. And then I would read the forums to see people's experience with
it.
That way I had both, because I can't trust Susan, who just had a horrible time with, you know.
She sounds lovely.
Yeah, but I couldn't trust that, but I did want to hear how she experienced it.
Yeah, you know? I think it helps you make your decisions.
Right.
At least that's my hypothesis. Mm-hmm. I'll be really interested to see, as I go through and talk to more and more people, how many people click that next button over and over again? Because when I go to PubMed, that's a really great resource where it's all peer-reviewed journals,
mm-hmm,
that are listed in those articles, and I do click next because usually when I'm looking up something, there's several hundred articles written on that,
yeah,
topic, and so I'll have to click next 8 or 10 times to make sure that I've gone through at least the last 10 years of research when,
right,
I'm really trying to delve into a topic. But I wonder how many times patients do it. I don't know. I'm going to put that in the back of my mind as we go forward.
I think where you read those medical journals, and a lot of it's not necessarily the same, but it's very good information. But then you do talk to Susan, who's that one in a million person that this crazy thing happened to that most doctors don't know about because they never experienced or never heard about, it's not talked about.
Mm-hmm.
What crazy Susan had you're like, holy crap, I'm having that exact same issue. And then you bring it to that doctor's attention, and that doctor may say, that is a possibility. Let's explore that. Or they may say, no, you know. So sometimes it does allow to open the door to new things and new information, if you will. So I think that's really a good balance of medical journals and kind of hearing people's story and getting an idea.
That is how I've looked at it. I think that's true. And we should also preface that Cameron does have a medical background. And so he probably is a good person to bridge both of these conversations. People ask me all the time, does it bother you when people bring a journal article or a forum to your attention when you talk? And the honest answer is no, because it means that patient is being their own advocate. And it makes me comfortable that the decisions that they're making are as well-informed as they can be. And so I agree that it's a good conversation starter, as long as no one is hung up on one aspect or another. So, okay, so now you have your AMH, you have your diagnosis, and then now we're talking. There's the three main tiers of treatment in fertility are do nothing and watch and wait and just time intercourse, IUI, where we try and help you ovulate and time ovulation with insemination, and then there's IVF. You guys, like we kind of prefaced earlier, made the decision to go straight to IVF. I kind of want to hear about y'all's thoughts and conversation that helped you guys make that decision to make that jump.
It really is a no-brainer for us, which is crazy. I know that's a really tough decision for most people, but of course money always has a factor, because we all know IVF is not a cheap thing. You know,
it's not covered everywhere.
It's not always covered. But that really wasn't the topic of discussion with us. It was almost how likely are we to go and get pregnant through IUI versus IVF. There was a lower chance of it working with IUI and possibly doing it a few times. And by the time that if we did get pregnant, we're almost at the same price, ultimately, that we was paying for IVF.
And then to have more children.
Okay.
We have to do IUI all over again.
Yeah.
And what if you have to do it 4 or 5 times that round too? Whereas IVF, if you do it one time, say you did. Thankfully, we were blessed and got pregnant that first time. Now, when we are ready to have more children, we have embryos frozen. We don't have to go through the whole process again. Mm-hmm. So, whereas we're looking at IUI, ready for that next child, if it took 4 rounds the first time, it might take 4 rounds the next time, and then for the third child. So, it was like, it wasn't really even a conversation for us. It was just the chances with IVF were so much higher.
IUI would have been easier on her in the beginning, but it may have cost us a lot more money or a lot more time, and then it might cost us not being able to have more kids later on down the road as easy. But in the long run, it's going to be easier on her, and not just physically, but emotionally, it's going to be easier on her. So
that was another big factor, is the thought of just going through so many rounds of IUI and knowing going in how low our chances were. It's hard to be optimistic, but then I know I still would have been crushed after every time it didn't work.
Yeah.
I know I would have been, even though I knew our percentage was like 1 or 2% chance of it working. I still would have been crushed every round, and that would have been hard.
Yeah.
So I wanted our best chance.
Those are two things that I commonly bring up. And so one of the questions I ask in a consult, kind of the first, is how many kids do you want? Because that can be a driver. And so it's interesting to see that that's kind of a common theme string together. And some folks will say, I'm tired of having a negative pregnancy test. I'm ready to kind of bring in the big guns of IVF. Yeah. So I see that. Mm-hmm. So I guess that wasn't a difficult decision. So what was a difficult decision for y'all in this whole process?
A difficult decision.
Or are you guys just stoic and just took it as it came?
We were talking about this last night, and PGS for us wasn't a difficult decision at all.
Okay.
Super. And
why not? So emotions.
For a lot of people, it is.
Yeah.
Because I'm part of those forums. Once again, I'm part of those on Facebook, and I see everybody writing about, you know, who got pregnant with PGS embryo, and who got pregnant with a non-PGS. Like, they're struggling with it, and for us, it was like, no-brainer. We're doing it.
Okay.
For us, that was just an easy decision.
Okay.
I think it was easy for us at this point. Was the devastation came in the very front end of, you're not getting pregnant on your own, most likely. You're going to have help medically, right? That was the most devastating information we could have gotten. So therefore, we're like, well, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we get a healthy baby out of this. If that means doing the PGS, that means doing IVF and knowing that, you know, we've got some good embryos, some that are, you know, make it to that day five and they're a grade A, whatever, you know, all that, you know, what y'all do.
AA, yeah.
So we kind of got to the point where we're like, I don't care what it takes.
It's hard for me as a clinician not know. So, I, you know, whether or not patients do PGS is entirely up to them.
Sure.
But it is hard for me as a provider wanting the best outcomes for my patients when I transfer a non-tested embryo and it doesn't work. Even in a tested embryo, you still don't know, was there something wrong with that embryo that was not just strictly with the chromosomes.
Right.
And again, PGS testing is going to be another two or three podcasts. We'll get into that. But the short definition of PGS testing is looking at the embryos to make sure it has the normal number of chromosomes. And the way I think of chromosomes is kind of like textbooks. You get a set of textbooks from your mom and a set of textbooks from your dad, and you want to make sure that you have the right number of textbooks from each. And that's what PGS testing looks like. And that's a bird's eye view from a bird that's flying really, really high. So it doesn't sound like you guys would do anything differently. So I'm going to cross through that question because that I think y'all kind of answered that.
Yeah.
So was there a challenge that you guys found that y'all ran into that you had to overcome? Or
I think a challenge for us was how many people were involved in this. I mean, we kept quiet. Like, we went through this whole process and didn't tell our family anything, not because we were ashamed. Now, at first, she did feel some shame because naturally a woman is going to feel, they're going to blame themselves. They're going to feel that way. No man can even begin to think they know how a woman feels in that regards. But once she kind of got through that and realized, hey, this is my reality, this is my story, let me figure out how I'm going to, you know, live it, it got to, okay, we got that element of surprise taken away from us now. She can't come to me and go, guess what, baby, I'm pregnant. And we get excited, right?
She did,
and she somehow managed to make
it.
I'll
never forget that story.
She managed, but it wasn't random, you know.
No, it wasn't.
It was like I was anticipating. I just didn't expect it that soon. Yeah. I was expecting it, you know, a couple of days when you called us, right?
For the listeners, she did. She cheated on her 10-day wait and managed to surprise Cameron anyway. So it's a really cool story.
It was a cool story, but anyway, so we were like, okay, that was taken away from us. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we still hold on to that's ours?
Yeah.
So we're like, we're going to keep this a secret from our family. We're not going to tell them that we're going through stuff, and we're going to surprise them with us being pregnant, because at least somebody needs to be surprised in this.
So you found support in each other, and then your journey to surprise your family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Okay. We got excited, and we looked forward to that. And now, it was a rough go during that time, because we did a lot of sneaking around and not going to events and not going to hang out with them lying and saying she had the flu or something whenever she was really just sick as a dog from
OHSS,
which is another, you know, thing you can talk about later on, right? But it got crazy. Like, we had to avoid our family, and they all but thought, like, we just didn't love them. Like, they were like, what is going on?
You know?
So when we finally surprised them, and
everything made sense.
Everything was like, oh, okay, that's cool. Amazing. So I say this in life, you have to find joy in life. There's always a sparkle of sunshine somewhere. You just have to look hard enough. And even though we were going through what seems like a very, very terrible time, we had to find things to be happy with and joyful about and look forward to. And one thing that wasn't talked about, and I almost forgot about it, is IVF ultimately saved Bree's life with finding out that she had that cancer scare. Doing the leak stuff. I mean, not that she had cancer, but it could have progressed to that, and there was no reason for her to have that test done. But because we were going through IVF, we were like, hey, let's go ahead and have it done just to make sure everything's squared away. Oh, we found something. Oh, we need to get this taken care of, had it gone untreated, unnoticed, it could have progressed into something which could have caused her, I don't know, maybe to lose your life or to lose your ovaries or something. I mean, there's a lot.
We did a little homework for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Those were several long conversations that we had.
Mm-hmm.
So, I remember those.
Yeah. So that was scary.
With support, because we didn't have our family,
mm-hmm.
I mean, everything was a secret. I personally, and I added him to them, but I used those support groups on Facebook, and there's over 20,000 women on these. And
I'm aware.
I added him. So, but I actually made like really good friends through those. And
that's awesome.
This sounds crazy, but I mean, we've sent each other things in the mail. When I was going through OHSS and felt like I was dying on the couch, I actually had somebody send me some special tea in the mail to help me feel better. And
oh, cool.
I mean, all kinds of stuff. And I'm still friends with them today. And, you know, they've had their babies. We've had ours. And
yeah.
We still talk and send pictures and everything. But
all over the country, all over the world?
Yeah. None of these people live anywhere near us.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something.
And so, I mean, I've had a few of them send us baby gifts and all Aww. Kinds of stuff. So, I mean, you can't get too wrapped up in it because... You know, like I was telling somebody else that's now about to start IVF, and she's like, I can't get on those. They're too depressing. I'm like, what? Yeah, there are a lot of sad stories on there and a lot of people that are going through the really hard times right now, but there's so many people that have had success and who have really good advice and experience, and you can learn so many things from it that it's worth getting
some
on
of those
there.
Women went through it and had bad experience, and it took, you know, 4 or 5 times, and they yeah. finally had that good experience, and they're like, guys or gals, you know, hold on, because, you know, just keep pushing, it can happen.
I gotta ask you, because this process is hard, but you guys did seem to be able to kind of work through more difficult times with an admirable outlook.
Mm-hmm.
How did you balance life and inside the treatments with the highs and the lows? What was y'all's secret for that? Because I think some people would love to be you, but that's not an easy thing to do. You guys seem like y'all are wired to be awesome like that.
I wish it was that easy. But for me and her is, and you can see my shirt, what I'm wearing a worship shirt. Like, my faith and it plays. I mean, it's literally the foundation of everything that we have to do, because without that, we wouldn't be able to make it. Like, I've told her many times, I'm like, what would I do without that? I don't see how I could make it through. So anytime we would come against a struggle, and we had tons and tons of roadblocks and struggles throughout this whole process, even beyond having the baby. I mean, just constant. And we just have to stop for a second after we kind of let that initial emotion out. Of, you know, what, he's doing something. He can take a really bad situation that even doctors are like, there's absolutely no way, and science and everything says no. He can say yes if he wants, and it all begins with your faith that you have in that. And we start getting down, and so she had many a night, so she's crying in the bathtub, and you know, I've had nights where I was just quiet and just upset, you know, in my own mind and such. But we have to go through those emotions. We're human. But at the end of the day, we have to stop and be like, okay, he's doing something for me. He's doing something in me. Let me just trust him, be patient, and let it happen, right? At least I do.
Once we started, I mean, getting the news and feeling like we were, like, blindsided because we never expected to go and have a doctor's appointment and be like, oh, yeah, you have PCOS. Y'all probably going to need... Y'all don't need help getting pregnant. Like, that was one of those nights where, you know, I had some wine and cried the bathtub. That was one of those nights. But after we started, we just looked at it as we're going to be excited and we're going to mm-hmm. be positive and we're going to only think positive, even though it's really hard. And we used it as, I think, like a way for us to get closer. You know, he did
wow.
all of my shots. I could have easily done my shots. I mean, you know, if I had to, I would have, but he did my shots. That was something we did every night at the same time, and it was like a process, and then we recorded everything we did, so it kind of made it fun for us, and we recorded everything we did because we knew we wanted to share our story after we were pregnant, after we finished our round of IVF, whether we were pregnant or not. We knew we wanted to talk about it because we felt like we had nobody to talk to because no one talks about needing help getting pregnant. Like, they're ashamed.
It's getting better.
Yeah, I get it. But we had nobody to talk to, so we knew we're going to record this and we're going to share our story so that if people feel like they need to reach out, they know that they can talk to us about it. And so we kind of used that. We made it fun, basically. Even though we were sitting there doing shots and procedures and blood work and all of that, we made it as fun as we could, and it kind of helped us grow closer.
I don't know if you got to see our video. If not, we could show it to you. But we did post it on the Facebook. I sound like I'm 80 years old. I posted it on that Facebook. We posted it on Facebook, and people, you know, of course, like, oh, that's sweet, that's awesome. We had no idea, blah, blah, blah. But what seemed to be the one thing people kept saying is, is Cameron wearing a different hat in every shot? It was recording like me giving her a shot. I would be wearing like a goofy hat every different, and it was every shot that we did. Like,
and
every
goofy
night.
Socks, if I remember correctly.
I got them on right now. I literally do. So I made it fun. Like, I always would like dress up in something just ridiculous or being silly and dumb, taking these shots and doing these shots for her.
And we'd have like AC/DC playing in the background because that was the only thing that I could do my shots to was AC/DC. And, you know, we'd have the dogs running around, and it's a hard process, but you have to have fun with it.
I love that y'all took charge and made it your own.
Yeah.
And came out better for it in the long run. I think that's a really powerful message.
Yeah.
So a few months after your transfer, it was Christmas time. And we were laughing about how you guys requested AC/DC be played for the embryo transfer. And so Stormont actually snuck into the embryo transfer room and put on AC/DC Christmas album.
Oh, gosh.
That's funny. That's awesome.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
That's funny.
And only he could change the music. And so I did all my embryo transfers to AC/DC Christmas that day.
That's awesome.
These are going to be awesome kids.
Maybe. I think this has been an awesome few minutes of talking to you guys. Just have a couple more, just kind of like wrap it up kind of questions.
Sure.
So, what was easy for you, and what was difficult for you?
Difficult was keeping it a secret.
Okay.
Difficult was
and going through it alone, kind of.
Yeah. Difficult was not having. I now know lots of people that have gone through IVF. And who need IVF. And after we shared our video and our story, they all come, you know, they messaged me.
It's
like, well, I would have loved to have been able to talk to you while I was going through that. But not having people going through it that I knew, because I had the forums, and the people are in, you know,
hard to have
New
a glass
York
of wine
or something. But, you know, it turns out there's people that I grew up with that actually have done IVF. They kept it a secret. Nobody knew. So not having anybody to really talk to, like, face-to-face or that I actually knew, that made it harder. And you'd think that I'd say, like, the injections were hard, and they weren't. That was easy.
Oh, wow.
They really were.
Okay.
Great.
I thought going in, because I've never liked needles, and I've never loved blood. And I thought, like, how am I going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing.
And me, you know, with my background, to me, that was like, let's get it. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fine with it. But at first it was, I guess the most frustrating thing was me was like, I'm trying to give her a shot, but she wants 30 minutes of just prepping. Like, okay, I can do this. But honestly, that lasted maybe a week. But
yeah.
I thought that was going to be hard. It ended up being a challenge, like a fun challenge, because we have done shots in parking lots, at restaurants, at weddings. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a couple people out there thinks that we were shooting up drugs, because I was sitting there flicking it, and she's like leaning over the back of my Jeep, and I'm putting it in her lower back or something like that, and people are like passing by looking at me, giving me a weird eye, and I was like, don't mind us, we're just partying over
here. We're having a
baby. But it got fun. Like, we were sneaky. It got to the point where, like, okay.
Okay. Great.
Can we sneak away at this dinner and go get this shot and nobody know. it legit got to be
y'all
a fun challenge. Yeah,
that's amazing. I think I can't wait to share y'all's story in that regard then. So I'm happy to remove this part of the podcast if you want to edit this out, but is there a place that you want to let people know to find out a little bit more about your story since y'all felt pretty strong about sharing?
We made one main video.
Okay.
Which was our reveal video.
Okay.
But I had videos from literally everything, so things that you don't know. Before we'd come into every appointment with you, we were in the parking lot making a video.
Oh, really?
That's true.
Every appointment, we'd do it before, and then we'd do it after with what news we got.
Oh, wow.
And we never did anything with them, and I almost think it was kind of a way for us to, I don't know, like cope with the process
express,
or something. Yeah.
Express feelings.
Yeah.
And emotions.
Yeah. Think about
so
it.
So we have videos from everything, and I've been wanting to put it all together because one place that I did go was YouTube to watch. You know, I did the forums and the medical, but then I needed to see people talk and hear their actual story. And so I would go to YouTube, and I didn't want to watch the 2-minute videos of I did IVF and this is how it went, and I had a baby or I didn't have a baby. I wanted to watch the 30-minute video that showed me their consult to their we got pregnant. I wanted to watch the whole thing, and I watched all of them. So I was like, I'm going
to
make
one of these. I even watched them with her, and that's kind of how we learned to make it our own, because we saw other people kind of, not necessarily having fun with it, but, you know, having some background music and kind of talking with the camera, laughing. Maybe their dog would get in the shot. And
putting their own spin.
So we did learn a lot that way. And it's not that we learned so much more information. It just felt like, hey, we can do this, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think the number one thing that we learned in all of this was, as open as we were about it, we still wasn't super open. But like she said, once we posted that we were pregnant IVF, we had no shame. Like, anybody that wanted to ask, we'll tell them, right? But we had people out of the woodwork. I had people messaging me, hey, man, you know, me and my wife are actually going through this too. You know, do you have any advice? I think I sent you like 2 or 3 people actually. people were coming out of the woodwork saying that they were going through this stuff, you know, and they're like, what do you suggest on this? You know, how about that? Like it was amazing for us to talk to people, and she had way more than I had, of course.
Yeah.
So I think what I would tell people in this, that instance is just, one, don't be ashamed, but two, like, put it out there. Like, people need to know that. I think there's a lot of people that don't even go the route of IVF because, one, they're ashamed to even start the process, or maybe don't even know that that's an option. And I think that's a topic that needs to be.
Or they look at IVF as it's so overwhelming. When we first got told IVF, all I knew about IVF was that's what celebrities do to have babies. That's all I knew. Like,
wow,
that was
true.
It because I knew nobody that had it, and that's kind of where you do see it is, you know, oh,
true.
That 70-year-old celebrity finally felt like having a baby or whatever, you know, not 70, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where you hear about it, and I'm like, that costs like $100,000. Like, we can't do that. You know, I knew nothing about it.
Okay.
And so it was just super overwhelming because I'm like, all I know is it involves a lot of shots, and I don't know anybody that's ever had to do it. And so looking at it from the outside, it was like, oh my gosh. But once I watched videos and everything, I was like, oh, okay, so there's these steps. That's not that hard. Like,
so
we can totally do that.
Yeah, I think people need to be way more engaging, talk about it. Like, and don't be ashamed. Like, she went through all those emotions of being ashamed and feeling, you know, down herself and blaming herself and this, that, and other. And I think I would tell the men that's going through this is, be as involved as you can. I had the luxury with my career, or both of our career, that I was at every appointment. It didn't matter what day of the week it was, what time of the week it was, I was at every appointment. Not everybody has that ability.
That's true.
But if you can, be as involved as you possibly can, because one, she needed that, and she knows some people right now who their husband won't give them shots because they hate needles. It's like, you got to get, if she's going to take the shot, you got to give the shot, right? I think the men needs to be as involved as they possibly can, because you need that. You need that growth together, but also she needs that support.
But I do plan on putting all those videos together at some point and putting them on YouTube for, well, if you do, for
let me
the
know.
Public.
Yeah, let me know. We'll link it through our website and through our podcast just okay. to help increase access for folks yeah. that are out there looking to do something like y'all did, because y'all did a great job, and I appreciate your time and insights today, and I think you'll reach a lot of people and do some good. So thank you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.